Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William P. Green, Jr., Chief Judge, presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. You may be seated.
Good morning. We're here to, for the case of David Hornick versus Shinseki. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
And who will represent the appellant?
Michael Moran.
And Mr. Shinseki.
Is that right?
Mr. Horan, you have 30 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any of that time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, Your Honor.
10 minutes, all right. All right, you may be seated. Mr. Horan, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please this honorable court, my name is Michael Horan, and I represent the appellant, David Hornick. There are three issues that Mr. Hornick has presented to the court. The court must reverse the September 2008 Board of Veterans Appeals decision for three primary reasons. The first reason is that the Board of Veterans Appeals and the VA Regional Office in its May 1996 rating decision did not meet the burden of proof that's been created under clear and unmistakable error. The second argument, Your Honors, for reversal of the Board's decision is that both the Regional Office in its January 2006 decision and the Board of Veterans Appeals focus solely on the March 1991 VA bench-breaking accident and focus on that and ignore what the rating decision actually decided in 1996 when it awarded Mr. Hornick Section 1151 disability benefits. And third, Your Honors, the third issue that Mr. Hornick presents is that Mr. Hornick is entitled to the 10-year protection from severance that is provided under 38 U.S.C. 1159. With respect to the first issues, Your Honor, the Board of Veterans Appeals affirmed the Regional Office's decision and found clear and unmistakable error. However, there was no error in the 1996 rating decision. The Regional Office and the Board of Veterans Appeals relied on this court's opinion in Switzer. However, Switzer was not a precedent in this case because Switzer actually interpreted a different section of 1151 in 1996. This court held in Switzer that the veteran in that case could not recover for 1151 benefits because his injury did not result as having submitted to a VA examination. In this particular case, Mr. Hornick was at the VA hospital and sat on a bench and it broke. Then over a period of 2 years, he received extensive VA medical care and treatment that ultimately led to him being paralyzed with loss of use of both of his lower extremities and with a loss of bowel and bladder sphincter control.
Mr. Horan.
Yes, sir.
Is your contention then that it was not the breaking of the bench that caused the injury, but rather the subsequent treatment? Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that's what the rating decision appears to have done in 1996. I think it's very important to note here, Mr. Hornick is not appealing to this court, as hundreds of other veterans have, asking for benefits. This is a case where he received benefits and had them for 10 years, and the regional office actually severed the award after he filed claims for ancillary benefits such as a specially adapted house, the automobile, and the adaptive equipment grant. In this case, Your Honor, we are not arguing that this court should find or grant Mr. Hornick 1151. The VA has already done that. What we're saying is that the regional office and the Board of Veterans Appeals have not met their burden of proof to establish clear and unmistakable error. It is not enough to say that it's clear that the bench broke. Well, it did break, but that's not the only thing here that existed in 1996. As an example, the agency is focused on 1151 to exclusion.
What law would you apply to the entitlement of benefits based upon that factual situation?
Part of it is 1151, Your Honor. Part of it was the Gardner case, which of the Supreme Court, which was issued after this court. issued the Switzer opinion. Part of it is 38 U.S.C. 5107B that requires the VA to give the veteran the benefit of the doubt on every issued material to the determination of the matter. Also includes 38 CFR 3.102 and 3.103, which require the VA to liberally construe the facts and law in favor of the veteran.
Well, the determination made was that Mr. Hornick's sitting on the bench while waiting for dental treatment did not constitute hospitalization or treatment for purposes of 1151 as a matter of law.
That's true, and that's part of the problem here, Your Honor. The board is not permitted to just simply ignore the factual findings of the agency in 1996. In 1996, the agency made a factual finding.
Well, you made those factual findings, but do you not have to also apply the correct law?
Your Honor, I'm going to argue they did apply the correct law. Switzer didn't control, and therefore Switzer didn't control. The agency's reliance upon Switzer as the authority for severance is wrong, and this court should order the VA to restore Mr. Hornick's benefits. The second argument I'd like to discuss, Your Honor, is...
What's the correct law that was applied?
They applied the law correctly in 1151.
How was it applied correctly?
They made a factual finding that Mr. Hornick's injury and resultant disability resulted from VA hospitalization, medical, and surgical treatment. Mr. Hornick, in 1996, had previously filed a Federal Tort Claims Act claim against the VA, and he received the settlement of that case. Then he filed for 1151 benefits.
Does the receipt of benefits under the Federal Tort Claims Act present a prima facie case for award under 1151?
I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that was part of the context when the rating board made his decision in 1996. The rating board knew that Mr. Hornick had filed a claim for 1151 benefits, and it also knew that if it awarded 1151 benefits and they found that the injury was the result of VA hospitalization, medical, or surgical care, that they would recoup the entire amount of $150,000, which is exactly what the VA did. And I would also note, Your Honor, that the record contains...
Well, actually, that's what they did, but was it legally correct?
It is correct, Your Honor.
Is it legally correct?
It is correct, Your Honor, because
the... Is it legally correct?
Excuse me?
Is it legally correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what makes it legal?
Well, the first thing is that they made the decision. And
based on what law?
Based on 1151 and all the other laws, 5107B, 3.102, 3.103, the rule that they're supposed to liberally construe the law and facts in favor of the veteran?
Wouldn't you say, Mr. Rand, that once the regional office found a clear and unmistakable, or no clear and unmistakable, or excuse me, clear and unmistakable, excuse me, once the RO found that the individual was entitled to 1151, the law gave the VA no choice but to recoup the money once he received the award under the Federal Tort Claims Act. So is that what you mean by the law legally?
Well, that's part of the law. I mean, in a manner of speaking, it's almost like Mr. Hornick, in a manner, paid for his 1151 benefits. And I note the record also contains evidence that Mr. Hornick actually tried to appeal the decision. When the VA told him that they were going to recoup his Federal Tort Claims Act settlement, he appealed it. And then he received a letter from the VA basically saying, no matter what happened, you've received benefits under the Federal Tort Claims Act, and you claim the only way you can receive them is for medical injury caused by medical care or treatment. And they basically told him if he persisted in saying that his injury was not due to VA hospitalization, that they would refer his case to the Inspector General. As a result, Mr. Hornick withdrew his appeal and didn't pursue it.
Mr. Rand, I'm particularly interested in the issue of whether or not the rating was protected.
Yes, sir.
I know that's your third argument, but I'm looking at the time.
Yes, sir. Would you be happy to address it?
Subject to the objection of any of them. That was my next question.
Well, Your Honor, when the VA proposed severance of Mr. Hornick's benefits, Paralyzed Veterans of America on his behalf raised the argument that he was protected under 1159, which basically says an award of service connection that's been in effect for 10 or more years is protected except for fraud, character of discharge, or not having the proper period of military service.
In order to sustain that argument, wouldn't the court have to read into 1159 as if
Yes, Your Honor.
Service-connected?
And that is entirely consistent with Supreme Court precedent. The idea that you don't read one statute or one statutory section in isolation, that you read the entire statutory scheme. Now, 1151 existed before 1159 was enacted. Therefore, there's a presumption that Congress was aware of 1151 when it enacted 1159 in, I think it was 1960 or 62. And therefore, when it did not include 1151 as one of the exceptions in 1159, it has to be taken or presumed that Congress expected a 10-year protection to apply to 1151 veterans. The VA General Counsel opinion, even if the VA General Counsel is opinion correct, let's say, in saying that all that 1159 protects is the fact of service connection, they don't answer the question, why exactly would Congress want to protect the award of service connection after 10 years? They don't answer that question, but the obvious answer to the question is to protect a veteran's entitlement to disability compensation. It is the award of service connection that starts the process where a veteran can receive compensation. And in the grand scheme of things, given that the VA is supposed to be ex parte, non-adversarial, and a paternalistic system, an 1159 veteran who's paralyzed, who was 60 years old at the time he was severed and lost more than $3,600 a month in compensation, actually has to be covered under 1151. Otherwise, the system makes no sense. The veteran could be 80 years old and the VA could just simply declare clear and unmistakable error, and the veteran loses everything.
The Federal Circuit in Alleman addressed the significance of these words as if and said that a veteran, as I recall, a veteran who was awarded, or a veteran survivor, drawing benefits under 1151 was not entitled to SDVI because the SDVI statute required service connection and 1151 did not establish service connection, and as if could not be read into the SDVI statute.
That's
how
right.
Do you square that case with your argument?
Well, because in this case, 1151 says that 1151 veterans receive compensation as if service-connected. And they referred to Chapter 11 and Chapter 13. In Alleman, the appellant in that case didn't appear in either. Didn't have a claim under Chapter 11 or Chapter 13. So the as-if language didn't apply. But we believe it does apply here, Your Honor, for the simple reason that we're actually dealing with compensation for disability.
And so you would say that 1159 is part of a compensation statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or a compensation scheme, and therefore 1151, where it refers to compensation, includes 1159.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that what you're saying?
1151 says that an 1151 veteran receives compensation in the same manner as if service-connected. He receives the award in the same manner. Now, part of an award has to be having the award in effect. And so if Congress says treat them the same way, then they should be treated the same way. As an example, there's no statute or regulation saying that 1151 veterans their disabilities must be rated under Part 4 of the rating schedule, or 38 CFR, but they are. As a matter of fact, and I'm not saying this is dispositive, Your Honors, but if in this case, in this record, up until the time the VA severed Mr. Hornick's award, they referred to his award as service connection. They treated his award as if service connection. And as the record shows, it wasn't until 2002 when Mr. Hornick filed claims for the specially adapted housing grant and the automobile grant and the adaptive equipment, after this court issued Kilpatrick and this federal circuit had affirmed Kilpatrick, that the VA decided to sever. But they didn't decide to sever initially. What they initially did is says 1151 veterans do not have no entitlement to these benefits. It was only after Paralyzed Veterans of America informed the VA that Congress amended Section 1151 in December 2004 to expressly provide that 1151 veterans who are otherwise eligible can receive these special benefits. That's when the VA severed them. And that's when they reached for Schweitzer.
Here's the part that troubles me with regard to Kilpatrick and then Alleman, both written by Judge Bryson. In Alleman, they were dealing with Section 1922, and the court said this: the statute refers to the date, quote, service connection is determined, unquote, and thus by its terms requires the DVA to determine that a veteran's disability is service connected before the veteran can apply for SDVI. And then it went on to say, and the as-if language of 1151 doesn't yield service connection. And I think in this case you've conceded that there's no service connection.
Yes, Your Honor. I did Kilpatrick in the Federal Circuit.
Right.
I'm well aware of what the Federal Circuit said. But we're dealing with a different case on entirely different facts here. We're dealing, again, I'd like to take a step back. Mr. Hornick is not appealing for this court to award him 1151. He's appealing from a severance after he was in receipt of these benefits for 11 years and after he paid for them, in a manner of speaking, by then recouping, the VA recouping his 1151 benefits. Or, I'm sorry, his Federal Tort Claims Act benefits. Now, the VA, when Mr. Hornick argued to the VA that he was entitled to 10-year protection, the VA interposed VA General Counsel 1396. I'd like to talk about that for a second. We argued to the VA that the General Counsel's opinion had to be considered obit or dictum when it came to the 10-year protection for the simple reason that the veteran in that case that warranted or led to the issuance of the General Counsel opinion had only been a receipt of 1151 benefits for 2 years. And the VA General Counsel opinion itself recognized that it had no application. And yet the VA General Counsel went off and said that 1151 veterans don't get the 10-year protection.
But couldn't the General Counsel issue an opinion even without a case?
I mean, in
that regard. So
that may be true, but he didn't do that in this case, Your Honor.
So the issue, it seems to me, with regard to the General Counsel's opinion, since we review it de novo, is whether or not how much reliance we should place upon it. And I think it was the Secretary that indicated in his brief under the Skidmore standards,
right.
Okay?
And
how would you say it would stack up under the Skidmore standards?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it stacks up very well. I mean, Congress enacted the 10-year protection statute back in the 60s. It took the VA up until 1996 before they felt the need to actually write an opinion. And they did it in a real case. I mean, it's not a case where the General Counsel just said, I need to interpret a statute without anything having to do with the facts of the case. He actually issued a General Counsel opinion in a case where the veteran had only been receiving 1151 benefits for 2 years and admits that it had no application whatsoever. So Your Honor is absolutely correct. It's under Skidmore v. Swift. If the court invalidates it or is unpersuaded by it, then the court itself would have to then to interpret the statutes, because there's nothing to defer to here.
But what I'm getting at is Skidmore, as I recall, provided certain sort of elements,
yes, sure,
for want of a better term, that we would look at this under. For example, the thoroughness of the opinion and other matters. Do you have any opinion on those elements?
Well, Your Honor, in our brief, we argued in our brief about 1151 and 1159 and the overall statutory scheme and invoke Gardner, that was our argument concerning the General Counsel opinion, because that argument goes to the substance of the General Counsel opinion. The General Counsel cites not a single case. The General Counsel doesn't mention this court's Gardner opinion or the Federal Circuit's, or the Supreme Court's Gardner opinion. It cites no canon of interpretation, such that veterans' benefit statutes receive liberal interpretations, and all doubt is supposed to be resolved in the veteran. So, in answer to your question, I hope I answered your question, Your Honor, it's not a good opinion on the substance. Even if the General Counsel were correct, as I said before, and it refers to fact-based ideas, we have to look at the policy underlying, well, why would Congress want that protection to apply? There's nothing wrong with this court looking at that and figuring out, since as so many statutory sections are, they don't answer every question, nor are they meant to be. What happens, Congress writes a general statute, and now with judiciary, this court is the one that gets to fill in the gaps that exist in a statute that doesn't actually address it. But I would say once again, Your Honor, that a couple other things. Since 1159 came after 1151, I mention this again, and the General Counsel doesn't deal with this except to deal with 1151 and 1159 like in isolation, as if they don't exist in the same statutory scheme. Congress is presumed to be aware that 1151 existed. And when Congress said, and Congress is presumed to be aware that the statute says as if, in the same manner as if service connected, which means that Congress knew that 1151 benefits were awarded in the same manner as service connection, and yet they created no exception. But on the face of the statute itself, the statute shows that Congress knows how to create exceptions. So not every answer comes from a statute. But the answer the VA came up with in 1996, it's got to be clearly wrong. They cite no canon of construction, no rules of construction, no court case, nothing. It was just the general counsel saying, I'm going to decide 1151 veterans do not get the 10-year protection. If there's nothing else, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Warren. You may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Yvette Robinson-White, and I represent the Secretary in this matter. Along with me today is Deputy Assistant General Counsel Ed Cassidy. The Secretary submits that severance of compensation under the provisions of 38 U.S.C. Section 1151 was appropriate in this case, and the court should affirm the board's decision. The Secretary would like to discuss three specific points about this case. First, the board appropriately applied the GC opinion. Second, the GC opinion was persuasive. And third, there was Q in the May 1996 decision. First, in addressing the board's decision, the board relied upon a determination by the GC opinion 13-96, which specifically addressed the same exact issue that is before the court today. Pursuant to 710C, the board has to rely upon that particular decision. In looking at that particular GC opinion, the Secretary would state that it meets the parameters as set out in Osmond v. Peek, where the court stated that the GC opinion has to be thorough, it has to have a good reasoning, and it has to be consistent. The Secretary would state that that particular GC opinion was thorough in its reasoning. It looked at the facts, it applied the appropriate regulation statutes that was applicable, and it also looked to see how this particular statute was analyzed within VA. Next,
what does as if mean? If an individual is getting compensation as if service-connected, 1151 also says that an individual survivor would receive DIC as if what?
As if service-connected.
All right.
The court has, Your Honor, the court has addressed the language of as if in several of its decisions, starting from Mintz v. Brown, dealing with Kilpatrick v. Principi, and recently, as in Alleman v. Principi, where it specifically states that although you receive compensation as if you are service-connected, you do not receive the status of service connection.
And what is the purpose of 1159?
The purpose of 1159, Your Honor, is to protect those veterans that have established service connection.
What's being protected?
The status of service connection.
What does that give you? What does the status give you?
Your Honor, the status of service connection gives you certain entitlements.
What are those entitlements?
Your Honor, you would receive health benefits, hospitalization. You receive compensation.
All right, you receive compensation.
Is that the compensation
that you receive under 1151, like what you receive under 1151?
Your Honor, in terms of what the court stated in Alleman v. Principi, that particular compensation, it's an exception to what the definition of compensation would mean in the regular sense of what has been determined under 101 parenthesis 13.
So you think Congress intended then to protect the compensation for a veteran who was service connected, but not that veteran who was injured at a VA hospital.
Exactly. Now, Your Honor, in
Do you have some evidence of that intent of Congress?
Yes, Your Honor. When looking through the legislative intent on this particular issue, it was interesting to note that under House Bill 113, there were a lot of objections to this particular bill. One of the things that the Congress...
Are we talking about objections to 1159?
Yes, correct, Your Honor. One of the objections that the that was espoused at the time was that service connection would be bestowed upon those who were not entitled to it. So the question would be, inferring from the legislative intent, a bill that was not received well and actually had to go through three votes in order for it to get passed, where they were opposed to really protecting service connection, but in the end they did, why then would they try to expand that without specifically stating such?
Well, was there any, I understand that was an objection, but apparently if they passed the statute, then that objection was overridden by the fact they passed the statute, correct?
Correct. And actually what...
So then the intent of Congress would in fact be to make the as-if inclusive.
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't think that they were trying to make the language inclusive. When you look at what the draft of the actual bill was prior to the one that's currently in the statute, the language specifically went to compensation, pension, as well as insurance. And they completely struck out that information, out those terms, and put in specifically disability or death. Now, whereas there is no clear legislative, clearly expressed legislative intent, it does make you wonder, why would the Congress strike out those three provisions and then just put in disability or death? They were truly concerned that those who were not service connected would be receiving protection under 1159.
Well, if there's no clear indication of legislative intent and the court determines that it has a concern with regard to what Congress intended in 1159, doesn't that create an ambiguity with regard to 1159?
No, Your Honor. The Secretary is submitting that the 1159 is truly not ambiguous. It specifically says service connection, and there's no reason to believe that at the time that Congress made this particular statute that it did not know about 1151. So in terms of interpreting of 1151, the court should give the plain meaning of the statute. It's reading, and if there is no clearly expressed legislative intent, then reading it as it's stated should be what the court should.
But why would Congress want to put people who receive compensation benefits under 1151 in a totally different category with regard to the potential economic impact of severance from folks who are service-connected in the traditional sense? It seems to me that everything in 1151 says we want to treat people who are injured as a result of hospitalization the same as service-connected folks.
Your Honor, besides that is not clearly expressed in the legislative intent, if you actually look at how 1159 came into being, it came into being at a time when the agency in 1954 went through a comprehensive review of its regulations, of its statutes. And what occurred was that several veterans, a lot of veterans had their service connection severed. And a lot of the veteran service agencies determined that this was something that they wanted to avoid. So in order to in order to address this issue, 1159 came about. However, in direct question to your 1150, answer to your 1151 question, if you look at 1151A versus 1151C, you'll see that there's two different types of language that's being used. And 1151A, it specifically states that it refers to compensation shall be received as if service connected. And then in those situations where the Congress felt that there would be an exception, such as in C, it said that the additional disability, not the compensation, but the additional disability will be considered as service connected in reference to statutory under Chapter 21 and 39. So they, in making 1151, they had specific things in mind that if they wanted to give the veteran the benefit, they would. We would have to assume that the legislature in writing 1159 knew about 1151, and if they wanted to provide for that protection under 1151, they would have given it somewhere within the statute.
Well, let me ask you this question. I think you said that 1159 came about because people were being severed, and there ought to be some protection for people being severed. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Now, they didn't. We'd already created a higher standard for severance and notice provisions and things like that. But here, Congress introduced an absolute 10-year protection, and that protection was for a period of 10 years. So the result of that was, seems to me, that Congress said there's a certain amount of reliance that's established on this income, and the VA had 10 years to look at it and find out that service connection, you know, wasn't appropriate, and they didn't do so. And since the individual relied on this income for 10 years, and VA, for whatever reason, didn't investigate or didn't determine it, then we're not going to disturb service connection. Now, isn't that, I mean, doesn't that sound reasonable? Is there any reason not to believe that's what the intent of Congress was?
Your Honor, when you were talking, you hit the mic, so I missed the first part of your question, so I'm sorry.
No, that's my fault. I hit the mic.
I'm sorry. Let me try to say it a little more simply. When this protection was established,
yes, Your Honor.
We're talking about the 1159 protection.
Mm-hmm.
What it did was it said, okay, VA, if you granted somebody service connection,
yes,
right,
mm-hmm,
you have every right to go back and look at service connection and determine it wasn't appropriately granted.
Mm-hmm.
And you have every right to do that for a period of 10 years. But after 10 years, you can't do it anymore. And it seems to me that an element of that, or the reason that that might have been instituted, is because there was a certain amount of reliance by the veteran on the income and the other benefits that resulted from the award of service connection. Otherwise, why would they pick 10 years?
Well, look.
Why didn't they pick a year? Why didn't they pick 2 years? Why didn't they take, I mean, if it wasn't a substantial reliance on this income?
Well, Your Honor, it does not state within the legislative information about why they specifically chose 10 years. However, the 10-year demarcation was characterized as arbitrary. And
characterized by whom?
Excuse me, Your Honor, with deference to the court.
Sure.
In the Executive Office of the President, they considered the Assistant Director for the Legislative Reference, Philip Hughes.
Well, in what document was this?
The Executive Office of the President.
Well, I know, but what document? I mean, did he just say, hey, I think it's arbitrary?
I'm sorry, Your
Was
Honor.
It an executive order that said this? Was it a preamble to the president's signing? What was the document?
Your Honor, in a lot of the statutory information, there were a lot of letters that were sent from a lot of different sources. Some sources came from VA. Some came from the president's office.
And where did you get this document? Is it publicly available?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where would one get it if he were in a member of the public? Or say one of my law clerks? Just as a hypothetical.
Your Honor, the secretary would be more than willing to provide.
No, I'm not asking about the secretary, because I know the secretary has all these files where they have all these, you know, memos and stuff in it. I'm talking about the public. Because it seems to me if something's published, then we could say we could reasonably rely on it. But something that's an opinion back and forth within the agency, to me, at least to me, has absolutely no persuasive or precedential basis for us to, no reason for us to base our decision on.
Your Honor, I would think that these documents would...
I'm not asking what you think. I'm asking what you know.
Your Honor, I can look into it to see...
Well, you got the document somewhere.
Your Honor, I went to the General Counsel's library, and the General
Counsel... pulled it out of a file, I'll bet.
And I pulled it out of, during research, and ran across...
You pulled it out of an internal file, didn't you?
Well, Your Honor, these records...
Yes or no?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So that was my only question. Okay, now, let's assume there was some, that 10 years was picked by it because we wanted to give the VA a fair amount of time to investigate whether or not service connection was appropriately granted. And there was some reliance by an individual for a period of 10 years on the income and other benefits. Why should there be a distinction between somebody who actually had service connection and somebody who was treated as if they were service connected? Wouldn't the same principles apply?
Your Honor, no. If the same principles apply, then they could have just as easily taken the language for 1151 and put it in 38 U.S.C. Section 1110 as part of service connection. But the legislature did not. They put them in two specifically different areas within the within the statutory scheme. For service connection, you find claims statutes specifically in one part. In 1151 claims, they put it in a completely separate part. In a sense, you know that there is a difference in the two. So I would say that that there is a difference in the status of both.
Well, what about the appellant's argument that we're not talking about granting service connection, we're talking about removing service connection, and their standard for the protection should be looked at differently than when we're granting service connection. So it sounds to me like your argument is, you know, cutting through everything, is based solely on the wording of the statute.
Well, Your Honor,
and in your idea about what the legislative history might be behind the enactment of the statute. Is that correct? I mean, if we're cutting to the chase here.
Your Honor, in cutting to the chase, specifically, the courts have already stated how the statute pretty much should be interpreted in terms of 1151 and what benefits
are
applicable.
But these are all for granting service connection.
Well, granting service connection is definitely different, Your Honor, than severing of service connection. In this particular case, when you grant service connection, you're looking to see if the disability was incurred or aggravated within service. When you are severing service connection, when you're severing compensation under 1151, you're looking to see if there was some type of error that was accomplished in the rating decision. And the court and the law has established for years, starting back from Russell v. Principi, how you do that.
That's exactly right. So, and we all agree about that. But we don't. But we're with the issue, I think, that most of us are concerned with it here is whether or not 1159 protects that severance. In other words, the VA, even if they severed it, I mean, even if they were protected, the VA, the rating is not protected, so the VA could reduce it to zero if they thought that the individual was no longer had the disability. So, I mean, compensation is still an issue that the VA can deal with. It's the service connection issue and whatever flows from that that's, you know, that seems to me to be the issue here. And I'm trying to figure out why an individual who was injured in a VA hospital should be, in this instance, should be treated differently than somebody who, you know, was service connected. I'm trying to understand the purpose behind that. I just can't quite grasp it. Other than looking at, you know, making the argument that the VA General Counsel made in his, in her, I guess it was at this point, opinion.
Well, Your Honor, in looking at severing of service of, I'm utilizing service connection in this sense, not because it's the specific facts of this particular situation, but just to explain. With 3.105D, you have the standard where if you sever service connection, that you have to look at not only that rating, but additionally look at information that might have been gained thereafter. If you look at all of that information.
You can only do that for 10 years. That's the point of 1159. I understand all the protections for, you know, for severing service connection. I have no beef with that, but I don't think this case is about that.
Well, looking at what the case would be about is whether or not there was Q in the May 1996 ratings decision.
That's one element of it. I agree, and that was argued by appellant that Q wasn't, you know, was the finding of Q was improper, but. We're putting that. I'm putting that aside for a second. I'm really concerned about this protection issue and why it would not cover somebody that, in my view, is situated exactly the same way. Because if you say if you say the individual is going to be treated as if they're service connected, doesn't the as if assume with it the benefits that would come with finding somebody service connected or as if they're service connected?
Well, Your Honor,
it doesn't stand as, you know, in isolation, which I think Chief Judge Green referred to.
Well, it goes back, Your Honor, to looking at the structure of 1151. Looking at how the legislature truly made a distinction between compensation, receiving compensation as if in one instance, and then in the same statute in subsection C, then it refers to the additional disability would be considered as service connected only for two specific situations, which would be Chapter 21 benefits and Chapter 39 benefits. And when you have a distinction like that within the same statute, you would have to assume that they clearly knew that there was a difference in the protections for one who was service-connected versus one who was not service-connected. And look at... Once again, looking back through the legislative history, there is no specific pronouncement as to this specific situation that deals with 1151. Once again, though, the statute is pretty clear where it states that 1159 only protects service connection. And this court, as well as the Federal Circuit, has defined on numerous occasions that as if does not bestow service connection benefits upon a veteran. So it's really left up to the legislature to make the determination as to why they determined they wanted to make distinctions between service connection and as if. They did not have to use the terminology as if. They could have just as easily put the 1151 status into the service connection statute, which is 38 U.S.C. section 110. They didn't. They specifically put it in a completely different section than those specific to service connection.
Tell me, state again what you stated that the courts have stated how as if does not entitle one to service-connected benefits?
Yes, Your Honor. In Mintz v. Brown, as well as in Kilpatrick v. Principe, mm-hmm. as well as in Allman v. Principe, they specifically go into an examination of 1151 as if does not bestow service-connected status upon a veteran. They actually go into looking
at... What does it do? What does as if do? Does, or whatever. What is as if? As if service connected. That's what it says, right?
As if is close to, but it does not mean the same.
Okay, all right. Stop right there. Close to, but does not mean the same. Because when you go down to C, it says even if you have an additional disability from the 1151A, you'll treat that as if it's service-connected too, right?
But it also... Yes,
just as you would have secondary service connection to a primary direct service connection.
Well, that's just a little bit different, Your Honor.
Just
because
a little bit. Okay.
With secondary service connection, the legislature felt it necessary to make that service-connected. Mm-hmm. So a veteran who's been outside, who was not in service, the disability wasn't incurred in service.
But they're recognizing in 1151 that, okay, the veteran has passed from active service and now he's being treated in the VA medical center. And they created an environment that is similar to what was on active service because it's almost in line of duty. I'm at the hospital, these things are occurring, and but for my willful misconduct, I may be entitled to compensation there for any injury incurred there.
Well, in Allman v. Principe, Your Honor, they specifically, the court, Federal Circuit specifically says that this disability is different because it's not in the line of duty. So they do make a distinction. They said it's not in the line of duty.
What is
when
it?
You look at...
You mean Mr. Hornick's?
No, in Allman v. Principe, when they're talking about the as if, and they look into compensation and service connection and say that the two terms are mutually
exclusive.
Because
you have to have that in order to get the insurance, right?
Absolutely.
Right, but here we're not talking about insurance. We're talking about an actual injury occurring at the hospital.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there are no more questions, Your Honor.
Well, you have 85 minutes left. What it says?
It's the way I read it.
Oh, it stopped working.
It just stopped working. Yes.
I didn't mean to speak so loud. Okay. Are we at zero?
Two more minutes.
Any other questions, Ms. White?
In closing,
what is the title of Chapter 11 of Title 38? Do you know?
Your Honor, just so that I'm very specific about what it says.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 11 is compensation for service-connected disability
or death? Compensation.
Compensation.
Right.
And in Almond v. Principe, the Federal Circuit, Your Honor, did state that compensation in the sense of 1151 was an exception.
Yeah, it's an exception. I don't doubt that. What does that mean? What kind of
exception?
Well,
under the reason why they said that it was an exception, Your Honor, is because under the definition under 38 U.S.C. 101, parenthesis 13, mm-hmm. compensation is reserved, stated to be a benefit that
someone
is received
from
one who's service-connected.
And that's why 1151 said, as if service-connected.
Your Honor, as the Federal Circuit stated in Almond, the as if does not bestow service connection upon the veteran.
If this court were to decide that that reading is correct, would that mean that that the appellant would have returned to him his full award under the Federal Tort Claims Act?
If, Your Honor,
with interest?
If the court found that as if meant that the appellant was service connected?
No. If the court accepted your argument, VA's argument, that 1159 did not apply, and further accepted the argument that Q existed in the decision, then wouldn't that automatically entitle the veteran to restoration of that offset that was collected from his Federal Tort Claims Act settlement?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
I think that's the whole point to the 1159. You said didn't protect.
That's right.
Your Honor.
If everything was done correctly in severing the award under 1151, then wouldn't he be entitled to restoration of the money that was offset against his award under the Federal Tort Claims Act?
No, Your Honor, because he's already received that amount of money and he was receiving a benefit that he wasn't entitled to at the time.
Well, wouldn't it have to be at least a two-step process? In other words, he gets his money back and then there's a recoupment action? Because CUE means that the decision is looked at the time of the original decision. I'm not sure if that has anything. Well, I shouldn't say that.
Your Honor, that would seem to be. That would seem to be a separate issue.
Except that they treat them both as compensation. So, in other words, if this wasn't compensation, why did they recoup? I mean, why did they offset?
Well, Your Honor, there are actually provisions for that. That's a statutory provision.
Mm-hmm. But only if the individual is compensated, right?
Well, it's already been established, Your Honor, that compensation is what he's receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, I only have one point to make, and that is that the government's brief basically rested entirely on the VA General Counsel opinion, and the mention of this legislative history and all these court cases as somehow supporting the General Counsel opinion is a bit unfair to Mr. Hornick. And if the court feels that it's necessary for additional briefing on the cases and the legislative history, I would be happy to provide it to you. Other than that, unless the court has some questions.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You didn't cite the Alleman case in your brief, but there is a particular statement in there that seems to be, I'd like to get your impression again. It Section 1151 does not accord service-connected status.
Yes, sir.
To a veteran's disability or death, right? And if it does not accord status, is that not what 1159 is all about? Aren't they talking about the status of service connection in 1159?
Again, Your Honor, if you look solely at 1159, that interpretation might exist, but it's well established you must read 1159 together with 1151 and the entirety of the statutory scheme. And when you do that...
But the Federal Circuit seems to have done that in Alleman, and what are we to do?
What the Federal Circuit said in Alleman, Your Honor, I respectfully submit, doesn't have anything to do with this case. It was based on what the facts of that case, and the precedent part of the case is what they decided in that case, what they needed to decide. The Federal Circuit hasn't decided if a veteran who's a paralyzed veteran with loss of bowel and bladder sphincter control and has receipt of it for 10 years, and then the VA severs it, if he's entitled to the 10-year protection. That's not an issue that's been presented to the Federal Circuit. So I really don't believe that Alleman has anything to do with the case, other than it was a case where someone was claiming a benefit. Mr. Hornick's not claiming a benefit. He had the benefit. What he's claiming is
benefit,
protection.
Which you had to have service connected to.
Well, I guess that's what we're arguing about, Your Honor. It is not possible logically or legally for a veteran to receive service connection if he gets injured in a VA hospital. So we are not arguing that. But Congress is aware of that, too. And 1159 has existed since the 1930s. And as this court is well aware, the VA has really not treated 1151 claims very kindly over the years, starting out with this court's Gardner case and the Supreme Court's Gardner case. VA just does not like 1151 claims. I don't know why. But in this particular case, Congress in December 2004 said, even after Kilpatrick, an act amended 1151 says the veteran gets the house, the car, the adaptive equipment. I would submit, while not controlling it, would certainly suggest that if that Congress in 2004 had been presented with this question, I don't think there's any doubt they would expressly provide in 1159 that it extends to 1151 veterans. So in conclusion, Your Honor, I respectfully submit that the clear and unmistakable error, unless you have some other questions, Your Honor, that the court should reverse the September 2008 board decision and restore Mr. Hornick's 1151 disability compensation benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. We will greet counsel, and then the court will adjourn.
All rise.